The City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read the 2 p.m. time certain.
Item 992, support a replacement bridge crossing with light rail transit as the locally preferred alternative for the Columbia River Crossing Project.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, and guests. I'll make some opening remarks, walk through the resolution that's before the City Council. We just have four people that have been invited to testify, and then we'll hold throw it open for public testimony, followed by council consideration of the resolution. After 3.5 years of participating in the Columbia River Task Force, I want to share with you my take on the issue, where we're at, and I believe where we need to go. Interstate 5 stretches 1,382 miles from Mexico to Canada with just one drawbridge, antiquated and unsafe along its route. It's the drawbridge that many use almost every day to cross the Columbia River. I believe after the study of the work of the Columbia River Task Force that we need a replacement. But it must be the right kind of new bridge, and it must be a bridge that Portland can be proud of in terms of design, construction, funding, and operation. It must, in my view, reduce automobile reliance. The new crossing must permanently reduce vehicle miles traveled, which is Oregon's primary source of greenhouse gas emissions. We need congestion-priced electronic tolling on both the new I-5 and existing I-205 bridges paired with real options like light rail and better transit while aiding the speed and movement of freight. I believe these tolls should be collected in perpetuity in part to help fund the needed improvements that have long been identified south of the bridge on I-5 and I-205. I believe that this new bridge must be the result of new federal and state transportation funding. This project is designated on the national level as one of six corridors of the future. That means new federal funding for the region that will not and must not compete against other local transportation funding requests. It means on the state level that state government must come up with new transportation funding for this project that does not take away from the city's transportation requests and need. This is absolutely essential given that Portland has a $431 million transportation safety maintenance, transportation maintenance and safety backlog. This bridge must be an inspired green, postcard-worthy design. This should be the world's most environmentally friendly bridge in terms of design, construction, and operations. Any bridge is an icon, and this one must aesthetically enhance the world-class grandeur of the Columbia River and Mount Hood. And it must be sensitive to its neighbors by helping to knit together the two halves of Hayden Island and downtown Vancouver. This bridge must be built with local hands. This will be the largest public works project in the region ever. Portland is the nation's leading incubator of sustainable design and technologies, making local firms well prepared to meet project expectations. Local companies, including emerging small businesses, minority and women-owned firms, should earn as much of the project work as possible. Portland's vote today is not the ultimate yes to begin building this bridge. The vote today will only approve moving the bridge project from one evaluation phase to the next. And it establishes the starting assumption in the next evaluation phase that the existing bridge will be replaced with no more through travel lanes than exist right now, and that it must include light rail or there will be no new crossing. I want to thank the governors of Oregon and Washington. I want to thank our congressional delegation. I want to thank the agencies that have been involved with this and the local stakeholders for being responsive to Portland's concerns and our goals for this project. And I appreciate that these decision makers have provided us with assurance that our aspirations and our concerns about this project and the next phase will be met with our satisfaction. But this is a bi-state project, and this is a project that will go on for multiple years. So the agreements we have now with people and the positions that they have might change. And so it is important to make sure that we are going to be treated well in the years ahead. And I want to just underscore that the city of Portland, although having sizable political leverage in the future, having talked to myself with the federal delegation and the governor's office, that nothing will move forward over our strenuous objections, over our objections, we also in this region have the JPAC process. And Metro has to sign off on this project. They have veto. Metro's decisions on this project will be guided by JPAC, of which I sit on and other local governments in the region sit on. Metro can either take JPAC's recommendation, vote yes or no, but cannot amend it. So although we don't have statutory veto power in this process, which I did try to achieve at the task force, I do feel confident that given also the good working relationship between ODOT, Oregon Department of Transportation, and the City of Portland, that our concerns and our goals will be addressed to our satisfaction in the future. But I want to be crystal clear that if they're not, I will strongly oppose the final design of this project if it fails to meet our goals. I would rather miss this round of federal funding and live with the significant challenges and vulnerabilities of the current bridge than to have a bridge built poorly that will punish Portland for the next 100 years. So today, this resolution calls for the City Council to support the locally preferred alternative that consists of a replacement bridge structure with no more than 3 travel lanes in each direction and must include light rail. This resolution further states that it must be done consistent with the city's policies and goals, and we list them out. I've mentioned most of them already. And that we assert our right to continue to comment on and shape the major decisions in the next phase, and that this resolution and action by City Council today should not be interpreted as the city's final input or acceptance of the design and construction of the project, given that we have a lot more details to work out and to finalize. With that, if it's okay with you, Mayor and City Council, I'd invite up Fred Hansen from TriMet and Matt Garrett from the Oregon Department of Transportation. Matt, you want to lead off?
Thank you. I appreciate it, Mr. Mayor. Commissioners, I truly appreciate this opportunity for the privilege of speaking with you over the last several days, and I've enjoyed it. I thought they were very productive conversations. I completely subscribe to the comments of Commissioner Adams. I will tell you that the decision before you, as articulated, is a great opportunity. It's an opportunity that's taken over a decade to prepare. We have positioned this. We stand on the shoulders of many people that came before us, people from the City of Portland, people from Metro, the citizens of the Portland metro area. They have informed this process for well over a decade. We are now at a point to take advantage of an opportunity to secure light rail over into Vancouver. This is a discussion that's been engaged for the last 13 years. We have now repositioned it to take advantage of this opportunity. An opportunity to secure a bridge that's much, much safer. The interchange fixes that will come on both sides of the river will make this bridge much more efficient in its operations. The economic implications goes without saying. It is the major West Coast corridor, trade corridor, with international implications. The issues of jobs, the opportunities, the issues of freight mobility, and in the issues of making sure that commerce, goods, and services, as well as our citizenry, move in a safe, efficient manner, are paramount. The environmental opportunities are significant. There will be reductions of CO2 emissions. There will be reductions of air toxics. The water quality will be improved. The storm water that now drains right into the river, we will fix all that up. The piers, in terms of fish, in terms of navigation, will be improved. There will be fewer cars traveling across this new bridge than there would be if we'd done nothing. Tolls. We have a financial mechanism in place that we can reintroduce to the citizens of the Portland metro area in tolling. It is your actions that will allow us to realize all these opportunities and more. But it's our partnership that will allow us to get there. Mr. Adams spoke about the relationship between ODOT and the City of Portland. That is a very healthy relationship. I've shared with him and with all you, I think, that at no time this relationship has been as healthy as it is right now. And there are tangible examples of the partnership and the relationship that we have, whether it's 82nd Avenue, whether it's the MLK Viaduct, whether it's Delta Park, or whether it's our work on the I-205 Portland Mall Light Rail Project. We have been there as partners. It is the way this region does business. It is the way the Oregon Department of Transportation does business with the City of Portland. I would ask that you reflect on that attitude, that approach. That is the same attitude and approach we bring to the Columbia River crossing. We take a step forward today, hopefully to secure a significant milestone as we move through this journey. We have a long journey to go. There is no question. There will be significant discussions, robust dialogue to come on many, many issues. But we will be at the table to answer those questions, to find solutions, and when all is said and done, deliver a bridge that not only the citizens of Portland, not only the state of Oregon, state of Washington, but this nation can be proud of. Mr. Mayor, with that, I am happy to answer any questions.
I have one.
Yes, sir.
One of probably more, but will you or ODOT forward a project to the federal government requesting funding over the objection of a majority on the Portland City Council?
No. That would be a failure of leadership. It would be a failure and put us in, I think, an awkward situation with our federal partners. We have to show consensus. So as we work these issues, it is incumbent upon all of us to find consensus, find remedies and solutions. We need to bring back a decision where we all embrace. That is significant at the federal level, and I would offer that's significant at the state level.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. For the record, I'm Fred Hansen, general manager of TriMet. I come here in support of the resolution that has been submitted to you for consideration by Commissioner Adams. Let me be precise in looking at it from my perspective, that is, from the transit agency perspective. I've served on all three of the broad bi-state committees that have led up to the point we are at today. My view has been consistent. I believe that the existing three through lanes on the existing bridge are compromised in terms of the efficiency of their operation, in terms of the safety, no shoulders, inability to be able to respond to any kind of either a stall or an accident in an effective way that doesn't have dramatic impact on the flow of vehicles. Number two, I believe that the lift span, the last on the I-5 corridor, one of the last in the anywhere in the interstate system in the United States, is appropriate to be able to be replaced. Three, most importantly, and you have emphasized it yourself, Commissioner Adams, and that is the importance of light rail as a part of this project. It is, to my view, absolutely critical and is, in fact, cannot have the project move forward if it were not for light rail being a part of it. The issues that are yet to be resolved are issues that I think are very important. They revolve around the number of auxiliary lanes. Those, to me, are important to be able to be ensured that they are not there for additional capacity, but rather are there for the efficient and safe operation of the merge lanes, but not for additional throughput. And those decisions, although not ripe yet for decision, are ones that I think are critical. Let me just close by emphasizing two additional points. many others that are before you regarding freight and other factors I will not address. But let me just address two. That is, in terms of the construction of this project, as we have done in all of our light rail projects, we expect that the green practices in construction and the results of that construction, whether it be from xeriscaping landscaping to recycling of materials to use of biodiesel in all of the construction vehicles, those issues are and will be forefront and, I believe, tremendously important in the construction of this project. Secondly, I do believe that all members of our community need to be able to participate in the economic benefit that comes from the construction. And as we have delivered on the Interstate MAX alignment, and as we are now delivering on the Green Line, I expect that minority-owned, women-owned, emerging businesses will play a significant role within the construction of this project, and that they will be local businesses who are able to participate using some of the techniques that I think we have pioneered on our light rail projects. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I just came back from Stockholm, Sweden recently, where one of the world's first congestion pricing approaches was implemented very successfully. They realized a 20% reduction in congestion and a number of other benefits. My vision for this project is for the electronic permanent congestion price tolling that will be operated and priced in a way that we will get as many of those 60,000 trips that currently come from Clark County and to Multnomah County and beyond onto light rail. And I wanted to, just for the record, sort of get your sense if you sort of share that sort of operational vision. It combines both operation, funding, and design of the bridge.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioner Adams, I do share that fully. I believe that congestion pricing, beyond the issues of raising revenue to be able to help support the capital or operating costs, is a very effective tool to be able to discourage the use of single-occupant vehicle when, in fact, there are effective alternatives, light rail being the most key, but certainly the bike and pedestrian access that is here is also very important. Carpooling. Other methods of being able to make most efficient use of our limited resources is absolutely critical. The numbers that you have quoted from Stockholm, though I was not aware of the exact percentages, do not surprise me. I believe that those are ones that we ought to be able to achieve here as well.
Got a question next. One of the issues come up, the congestion pricing you were just talking about. It's my understanding that the tolling doesn't begin until the new bridge is completed. Is that in the LPA, locally preferred alternative, or is that?
I think there's some discussion.
Yeah,
Commissioner Solomon, I think there's some questions in direction to look at tolling as soon as possible.
To be very previous to a new bridge.
But that said, I think indeed the tolling comes with the new bridge and all the opportunities and options of congestion pricing using the electronic tolling. I too subscribe to the vision, Mr. Adams.
So to the extent that people raise the issue that if the high gas prices that we're seeing now to continue into the future, we're seeing vehicle miles traveled right now declining, and that will affect gas tax revenues, which until congestion pricing is in place is the primary method by which we have a state funding share. What's your response to that kind of a scenario? We can't generate the initial capital to get to the point where we're going to have a more steady, more even, fairer pricing approach.
Well, again, it is certainly one tool in managing congestion. Also, if it's complemented, as Mr. Hansen said, with other travel options, whether the light rail vehicles, bike ped facilities, give folks the options to pursue those. But it is a double-edged sword. You're exactly right. I think it speaks to the issue that we have attached our revenue source to a falling star. The gas tax is not producing the revenues as it once did. We at the Department of Transportation have gone out in front of this, and we've identified a transitional opportunity in using transponders in cars to track the vehicle miles traveled. The pilot was done in Portland. 260, 280 folks in Portland put these transponders in their car. There were two service stations in southeast Portland that attached the transponder on their pumps. So the existing infrastructure we can use. The pilot was termed successful in that the technology is there to track the number of miles traveled. So we're out in front of this thing. It's not all the work that we have done, I would argue, had the eyes of not only the nation but international folks looking at this opportunity to make a transition from the gas tax. So we know over time, we may be a decade out or sooner, things seem to be coming at us very fast, but we know the technology exists, we have proven the concept, and we are aggressively pursuing the next phase of that contract.
We have sufficient legal authorities to do these things?
Yeah, I think we have. We've positioned the opportunities. There are some additional legislative conversations we have to have. But
is
there
a fundamental legislative yes or no that would be required in order to use transponders or require them and use them for
the biggest issue? The two of the issues that came up are the issue of privacy. And there are some people that raised the concerns. Again, Big Brother in the car, to be very honest with you. That said, reminding folks that we're just tracking the number of miles they travel within the state of Oregon. Don't care where they go, the number of miles traveled. The second issue, incentive, disincentive. Are you charging everybody the same way? If Mr. Hansen drives a Prius and I drive a Hummer, should we be treated equally? Those are policy-type questions that I think will engage the legislature in these type of conversations.
But the fundamental legal authority right now does not exist, or
I think
does it exist?
No, it does. I think we've worked to position this state to
secure. Any comments, Fred?
Just one thing, Mr. Mayor, Commissioner Saltzman. Although Director Garrett might be able to speak to it more directly, at the federal level, it is my understanding that the Secretary of Transportation, in fact, may allow for, which I think was probably implicit in your question, to be able to charge earlier than the actual implementation of the construction. That is a high bar, it is my understanding, to be able to receive that approval, but that approval can be given by the Secretary of Transportation. So that answers one slight or narrow piece of your question.
And she told me exactly that when I had a face-to-face conversation with her, that she thought that early tolling was possible. I just want to underscore why using the existing bridge with tolling for me is not a long-term strategy, and that is because this crossing remains a drawbridge.
Yep.
And half of our crossing capacity north and south is dependent on two drawbridges. And so for me, after a lot of discussion, and I think reasonable people can disagree on this, but after a lot of discussion and analysis, early tolling, I personally would like to see happen. But that combined with using the existing drawbridge in the long term doesn't work for me.
Mr. Hansen, I had a question. You mentioned the economic opportunity that this project presents for our community and opportunities for women and minority-owned businesses. Can you tell me where you have a situation where TriMet and ODOT are partners in a project? Who's the lead or on that? And would your policies with respect to minority contracting be the standard for the project as a whole?
The issue, I'll let Director Garrett speak to a part of it, and obviously this involves Washington Department of Transportation as well. All of us, I think, and I can certainly speak for Matt in this, are committed to be able to ensure that women-owned, minority-owned businesses, emerging businesses that are local, participate fully within our projects. We have developed some very successful programs in the projects that we have led, Interstate Max, the current Green Line, that have, by breaking down contracts into small pieces, making sure that those very businesses are able to compete successfully and provide high quality of work. I know that Director Garrett will want to be able to ensure that whatever role he plays in it will also abide by those same approaches. I'm convinced that we can do that on this project in all aspects.
I think, Commissioner Fisk, I go to school on the work that Mr. Hansen and the good folks at TriMet have done. There's no question about it. As a matter of fact, the procurement conversations at the Oregon Department of Transportation have changed because of some of the efforts of Mr. Hansen. But it comes down to, we have a long way to go. We have a lot of partners with WSDOT. I will assure you that this, and speaking again, maintaining the theme of opportunity, this project provides opportunities for all businesses to grow, small, women-owned, minority-owned. We will be aggressive on that front. And I know the state of Washington is there as well.
I have a question, Director Garrett. It has to do with the financial plan. Last time we had a work session on this and you were here, I asked, what was the financial plan? And it seemed like it was rather loose in terms of how it was going to be paid for. And what I'd like to know is, will there be a specific financial plan in place that is specific with dedicated revenue streams that have been guaranteed before the construction of the bridge begins?
Mr. Mayor, there has to be, but this is kind of the awkwardness of the process we have. We're moving through a process where we've taken multiple alternatives. We have narrowed those down to the alternative you have before you today. So we now know exactly what the project is. So we can now look at refining the financial side of that. Once we secure the locally preferred alternative and we continue to move forward, it is in the time period between the draft and the final environmental impact statement where we will engage aggressively on the financial plan. We will understand exactly where the numbers are. That will, because once we move to the and secure the final EIS, and then following that a federal document, the record of the decision coming from Federal Highway and the Federal Transit, we stand at the abyss of construction. You have to have your financial plan in order. I would argue we're jump-starting this process because this is a multimodal project, and the engagement of Transit and the FTA, they're wanting the information earlier, because once we lock down on the price tag associated with the transit part, that's built in, and we must honor that budget as we move through. That comes sooner than most highway timelines, but I can assure you, as we move into the late summer and move to and toward that final EIS sometime in fall of 2009, the financial plan will be solid.
And I thought it was also my understanding that the City of Portland would not be required to contribute towards that financial plan. Is that correct?
There's nothing before you today that's asking for money.
Will there be?
No obligation to put skin in the game. Well, I'm sorry.
Say, will there be?
Well, as of right now, that's not the ask. But what I would, there are, if you look at the exhibit and some of the conversations pertaining to enhancements or mitigation type efforts above and beyond, community type investments, there may be an opportunity in the future to leverage those opportunities. We're not asking you to engage in that. That's a project cost that we will deal with around that project sponsors table. That said, going to school on Delta Park, some of the other projects we've done, there has been opportunities for the city to actually put some skin in the game, to leverage additional opportunities for the neighborhood's community. The Bryant Street overcrossing is something that we were engaged in that effort. I think the city put forth $15,000 just to leverage additional opportunity. So I wouldn't forgo the opportunity for the city to invest in the project. We're not asking for anything now. But I wouldn't foreclose that because in the future it may be beneficial to secure future opportunities.
The last time we met, you were going to provide me with some information about the decision points and what those would look like so that we would have a better understanding from this point forward where the decisions would be made, who would make them, and what would be the result of those decisions.
I have a timeline that kind of walks through that, Mr. Mayor. I'm more than happy to give that to you, hand that out now, meet with you and the staff to walk you through what I've put down. Really, it's a calendaring out from where we start today. We actually reach back to 1999 in this thing, but we fast forward from this point forward. Where are the major milestones, who engages, what are the types of discussions that transpire over the calendar as we move out through and into the 2010 and beyond time frame.
So you have that today?
Yes, sir.
Could you give that to the council clerk? Look at that.
Mayor, if I could, there are sort of a couple of issues related to finance that I think may be useful to get on the record, and as well as that I think I can speak for the City Council that any effort to come up with state funding that preempts local government's ability to raise our own local revenue for transportation would be, I would oppose strenuously, and I think the entire City Council would oppose. And I know Big Oil, the Big Oil suppliers are always trying to preempt us from considering local transportation fees. So I just want to make sure that you know my personal view, and I think the council's view on that effort. And then I would also say that, we will know before we have to sign off on the final details of this project whether there is state enthusiasm and success at getting more resources to local governments, transportation resources to local governments, the work of Senator Metzger to potentially raise the gas tax to the benefit of the funding formula. We will know by the end of the legislature his success at that, and our expectation is that we would see enthusiasm at all levels of city government, not only to find the statewide resources for this bridge, but also for the long backlog of maintenance and safety transportation needs for local governments as well.
Other questions? Thank you, folks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For the others?
Yeah, we have two more invited and then public testimony courtesies to our good partner, Robert Liberty. And then Leslie from Office of Sustainable Development Commission. Sustainable Development Commission. This looks like Tim. Did I say the wrong name?
No.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Mr. Mayor, members of the Commission, Commissioner Adams, my name is Robert Liberty. My business address is 600 Northeast Grand Avenue, Portland, 97232. I'm a member of the Metro Council. I represent District 6, which is almost all of Southeast Portland, a large share of Southwest Portland, and part of Northeast Portland. I'm here today speaking on my own behalf as a Metro Councilor. My views diverge in significant respects from those of my colleagues. I'm going to cover four topics briefly. One, my position on the resolution before you on the project. Second, two factual matters relating to bridge lifts and the condition of the bridge that may be important to you. And then two topics, always of interest to politicians, money and power, and conclude with some suggestions to you about how you might proceed. So my position on the project, I think there are many ways we can address the movement of goods, materials, and services throughout our region across the Columbia that are financially, environmentally, and socially responsible. The project proposal before you is not one of them. It is bad for taxpayers, bad for the environment, and bad for our communities. I don't think we can afford it as a region, as a set of taxpayers, or as a planet. Unfortunately, that is the proposal you are considering today. So let me go over two points of factual information that might be useful in your consideration. One is the structural condition of the two bridges over the Columbia River, one built in 1916, one built in 1958, the same year that the 1916 bridge was raised and improved. The 1916 bridge, by the way, is younger than three of the bridges over the Willamette River. On the ODOT website, the Oregon Department of Transportation website, is a bridge condition report. And they have a rating of the design standard and structural sufficiency of all the bridges on the highway system. They have identified 30 bridges on Interstate 5 that are structurally deficient. The I-5 bridges are not on that list. Those bridges are rated structurally fair for substructure, deck, and superstructure. In fact, they have the same rating as the Markham Bridge and the Boone Bridge. So what we're saying with this recommendation is it's more important to tear down an existing bridge, which has the same structural rating as the Markham or the Boone Bridge, and replace it than to fix 30 bridges that the Department of Transportation has identified as structurally deficient. Second point has to do with bridge lifts. And I have some information. I'm afraid I didn't bring as many copies as required, but certainly enough members of the commission. This is from one of the technical reports in the draft environmental impact statement. On page 4-3, you'll see a diagram that shows the height of the bridge clearance now. So the primary channel where the lift is, it's only a 40-foot clearance, but the barge channel, which is further to the south, the clearance is 58 to 69 feet. The alternative barge channel is 69 feet. And you can see the routes. There are issues having to do with the downstream rail bridge that could be addressed. If you turn the page over, and it's actually page 4-5, at the bottom marked with a star, is the distribution of trips by type of craft and the height requirements. If you look to the right, you'll see that there's about 30-some trips a year that can't fit under the existing lifts. Some of those are sailboats. It may be cheaper for taxpayers to buy each of the owners of those 24 boats a replacement boat or an additional boat and station it upstream or downstream to avoid the lift, perhaps saving a couple billion dollars. There is a problem, you can see with the diagram, of the fact that barges moving downstream have to swing to the north bank to go under the existing swing span. That could be fixed by putting a lift span on that rail bridge. And that bridge, by the way, is more important for freight than the freeway bridge, because that's our main north-south rail link. And the cost of that in mid-1990s was about $45 million, I'm told, which is compares favorably with the cost of the CRC study, which is about $30 million so far. Now I want to talk, having talked about those two factual points, I want to talk about money. I have in my hand the proposed amendment that will be acted on by the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, of which I'm a member. In fact, people hate it when I remind them I'm the vice chair. We'll be acting on tomorrow morning. And it has a list or a description of the finances. None of this is too surprising, but it's useful to remind ourselves what we're talking about in the way of money. A total of $3.5 to $3.7 billion. The share from federal discretionary highway funds is $400 to $600 million out of that total, $400 to $600 million. The state share is $823 million to $1.45 billion. Now, if that's divided equally between the states, which has been how this project has been described, we're talking about $400 million to $725 million from the state of Oregon. If there was a 14-cent gas tax, a proposal that was endorsed by the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation last month, with one member voting nay, you're looking at them. If there was a 14-cent gas tax increase, we saw a list of projects that could be funded. The CRC is not on that list. I don't know what you think the chances are of the next legislature approving a 14-cent gas tax increase. I think they're rather low. How about federal money? Are we going to be protected? Are we going to be able to have our cake and eat it too, and have pie and two entrees? What you have before you is just a page capture from a website from the Federal Highway Administration that has fact sheets on the current transportation bill called Safety Lou. This is the fact sheet for the National Corridor Infrastructure Improvement Program, and it has the amount of money authorized for the entire country. We're in the 2009 fiscal year. It's $390 million for the United States. There's a list of projects provided as well. The CRC is not one of them. The current bill expires in 2009, Safety Lou, and no one knows how much money will be appropriated, whether it will be earmarks, whether it will be structured differently. So we actually don't know what the federal contribution will be. The deadline that's been referred to is for transit funding share, $750 million this year, but no one really knows where the highway money will come from the federal government. We have a $200 billion payment we make each year on our federal debt. We'll have a new president. What are the chances for a substantial tax increase, and what will be the contents of a federal transportation bill? I don't think we know. Congressman Blumenauer has warned us, as is appropriate, repeatedly, don't assume we can fund everything. So my conclusion about money is I have real doubts that the money is going to be there, and I think we're taking a big gamble on a very, very expensive project with pretty modest benefits. Finally, power. I believe as a matter of practical politics, staffing, and as a matter of law, by approving this resolution, Portland is ceding its oversight of this project to the Washington and Oregon Departments of Transportation. I think it is naive to think that a project that has been driven by the Department of Transportation staffs toward a particular goal from the very outset is somehow going to magically be transformed based on letters from two governors. That's not the real world. Second thing is something I just learned last week. In 97, I'm not sure, 90, in a session in the 1990s, the Oregon legislature adopted a special procedure for approving north-south light rail. It's called the Land Use Final Order legislation. It's not codified. And it sets up a separate process for approval of a transit project across the Columbia River. Staff at Metro now says that the highway can be approved using that process, a process which does not include the City of Portland. You would have no role in determining whether it complied with your land use plans. Metro would make the decision using criteria drafted by LCDC, also not codified, which I've never examined. I don't know what they are. So whatever chance you thought you might have, if this proves to be the case, to actually have a say over the land use impacts of this on the City of Portland, I think would be lost. Now, whether that's susceptible to different interpretation, I think is an interesting question, but I needed to advise you that you may not be able to play a role in the land use decision-making that should accompany transportation decision-making. Finally, do I have some suggestions? Yes. First, reject the resolution before you. Failing that, here are some options. Make your approval valid for 1 year, during which you can receive and evaluate information on available federal and state funding and funding trade-offs. We'll know whether Congress is going to enact a bill and whether the legislature is going to raise taxes substantially to fund this project. You'll also know what the impacts are on meeting Oregon greenhouse gas reduction goals, vehicle miles traveled. You'll have a better idea as a result of the work underway at Metro about what are the good strategies at a regional level instead of a project level for transportation investments. Should have more information on impacts on land use patterns and air quality for the neighborhoods of North Portland, and the impacts of increased gas prices. As I think Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, travel has fallen, I believe, on the bridge 2 years in a row now. So that would be one approach, 1 year approval, subject to reconsideration a year to see whether or not these conditions have been met or the project needs to be rethought. Second approach would be to make your approval contingent on securing $600 million, or whatever amount you wish to identify, solely from the state of Oregon, and not to exceed that amount. Third, and this is a separate amendment, is because I believe that the chance this project will be built is less than half, less than 50-50, for a variety of reasons. There is a lot of politics to work through in Washington, D.C., Olympia, Salem, and probably litigation. Do we have a plan B or a plan C to do something constructive? I think it would be useful for you, regardless of how you vote on the resolution, to direct your staff in the Bureaus of Transportation Planning, Environmental Services, and the Office of Sustainable Development to prepare options for Plan B and Plan C. Plan B is based on the idea that we do have tolling to invest in safety and seismic improvements, to perhaps extend a local bridge to Hayden Island and extend the MAX line, but would require cooperation from the state of Washington. Plan C is, what if Oregon and Portland and the region have to go it alone? Are there things we can do that will make it better for people commuting, for people driving trucks? And I believe there are things, and I think there are things that are smarter, cheaper, and greener. That would give you some options to look at if the money does not materialize or other obstacles arise to the project, and allow us to have a positive alternative to what I think is a mistake, a project based on 1960 ideas charging out at 2030 prices. Thank you. I'd be glad to answer questions.
Robert, you and I are friends and colleagues on these issues of transportation, and you and I have had an opportunity to talk about the issues that you raise, and I take your experience and expertise and passion in this area very seriously, and I've considered your points very carefully. I think that the difference between this bridge and the other bridges on I-5 is this is a drawbridge, and for me that is not an inconsequential difference between the state of the condition of the other bridges. And I do think advancing this project in the next phase of evaluation to to I'm not satisfied with all the evaluation that's been done to date. I think things have changed in the environment and in the transportation world significantly and perhaps permanently. And I think the next stage, we will require the kind of evaluation, rigorous evaluation, updated evaluation that you talk about. For me, there will have to be a drop-dead date in which this bridge either has the finances together, move forward, or not. I don't think anyone in the room is going to approve moving forward with construction for a project for which is not financed or commitments to financing. I think the notion of Plan B is a very useful notion. That's why I'm, you know, very interested in early implementation of tolling that you've called for, and I think is a really useful idea that sort of begins to sort of be a Plan B or an interim plan while the decisions are made how to fund this particular bridge. So the part about making our decision contingent for 1 year we've looked at that, will not pass federal muster. That's why we're being very clear that our decision today before the City Council is not a yes to the project. It is moving it from one phase of study to the next and with some starting assumptions for that next phase of study.
Mr. Adams, if I could respond to one point. One of the things that's troubling about this project is how it intersects with the development of national policy. We've built our reputation as a place that integrated land use and transportation that understands that where and how you grow affects how you travel, and therefore how much you can contribute to global warming or access to jobs, that these are integrated, and that that the best approach is combining choices of travel, choices of places to live. But when it comes time to be an advocate for the content of the next transportation bill and the critical role played by Congressman DeFazio, what we'll end up doing, I fear, is saying that the most important thing is to draft national legislation in a way we can get a 12-lane freeway bridge, which seems to me to be a reversal of what our national leadership role has been. And that this project, although we say it's not going to compete, is competing. It is competing, and we still have no system for evaluating one project against another in terms of its cost, its performance, along a spectrum of benefits and costs. So that we can say that we're going to keep a tight rein on it, but I've watched the politics on this, and the pressure will be to put this at the front of the line, and we will lose other projects and other policy, and that concerns me. I know that you share a lot of these policy perspectives, but that's my take on the politics.
And I think very validly so. The way I view it, though, is we're not going to be required to sign off on a final plan, nor will we. I think I can speak for City Council, sign off on a final plan unless we see that the money to build this bridge, a project of national significance, unless we can see, touch, smell, and taste, doesn't come from other needed projects in the region. So we share the same concern and passion. I think that the timeline that we've been given allows us to object in the future if we think that pots of money that should be going to local governments for local transportation projects are being raided.
Robert, I have a question. You alluded to the fact that there could be a state law or rule that would allow for the displacement of our land use laws in connection with either the light rail or, as someone has suggested previously to me, in the land appurtenant. Do you have specific authority on that?
Well, what I can tell you is that the legislation is referred to as a land use final order. We're using it, we'll be using it in the Portland-Milwaukee light rail decision, and it was designed to clarify, simplify, and consolidate land use decision making by creating a separate review process focused only on Metro rather than all the affected local governments and setting up criteria that are different. That law is in effect now. What our staff said in this last week was that the legislation refers to any related highway improvements. That's a paraphrase, Commissioner Fish, but any related highway improvements. So I think the effort will be to take a legislation designed for a light rail crossing and treat a $3 billion bridge as a related highway improvement and put it through that process.
Yeah, but I'm just curious, that's the authority you're citing, but when you say the effort would be to do that, do you have any indication that ODOT or someone else is planning to cite to that authority?
Yes, our staff told me that last week. So, yes.
The land use issues that I think are most challenging for me are the fact that our approaches to land use and planning are different north and south of the river. And for me, therefore, the operation of the bridge, the tolling, the permanent tolling, congestion pricing approach. And in Europe, it's electronic. You don't even use gizmos. They just take a picture of your license plate. You set up an account. It comes out of your credit card or they send you a bill. Those operational decisions are so important because they need to act as sort of the virtual, less auto-dependent planning that would be great north of the river, but we on the south of the river can't necessarily dictate. So that's why in the four areas that I'm going to continue to be vigilant on, the whole operational, the tolling, congestion, pricing, for me are going to continue to be so important that we get those right, because I think they can act as they can achieve the same kind of benefits as good land use planning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Leslie Carlson, and I'm a small business owner, and I'm the co-chair of the Portland Multnomah County Sustainable Development Commission. I want to thank you first for being willing to tackle and raise some hard questions about the CRC. I know this is a difficult issue, and it was difficult for our commission when we considered the proposal, the LPA, before you today. I know you've read the commission's letter of June 2nd, so I won't reiterate those concerns, but I want to give you a little bit more information about the background of what Sustainable Development Commission members were thinking when we wrote that letter. I think it's safe to say that most of us believe there's a paradigm shift going on right now, and that society in 20, 25, 50 years will think very differently about transportation and land use than we do now. You can see that paradigm shift in sort of the rise of all things sustainability, including the city of Portland's reputation. At the same time, the awareness of climate change is increasing, and gas prices are rising on almost a daily basis. The result of this, we've seen VMT go down all over Oregon. Public transit systems are filling up. Our consumption of gas in the Pacific Northwest is down to 1966 levels. That is a stunning reversal of decades of increases. Many public policy experts expect a tax on carbon in 2009 when we get a new administration in Washington, D.C. That may mean carbon taxes. It may mean a cap and trade system. It may mean both. As a result, even if the cost of oil were to drop, those taxes on carbon will mean that oil will remain expensive into the future. Unfortunately, the SDC felt like this paradigm shift was not reflected in the data that underpins the CRC and the number of lanes and the demand that we'll need. The LPA that we were presented with had driver behavior predicted at $1.25 a gallon for gas. And I can't remember the last time gas was $1.25, but it was a long time ago. No allowances for carbon taxes were built into that modeling, and the SDC's concern is that the LPA is not built on what will likely happen in the future, but on predictions from the past. You all know very well that Portland has a reputation and is a model for sustainable development. Our efforts to create a vibrant economy and to fight climate change at the same time are heralded nationally and around the world. We have this reputation because of the innovative and brave decisions of the men and women who created things like the land use system, like our transit mall, our light rail system, and more recently, our bicycle transportation system. The SDC sees the CRC as an opportunity to create a new model for sustainability. We believe you can grow an economy and create a transportation system while decreasing greenhouse gas emissions. It's not going to be easy, but we believe it's possible. This bridge needs to reduce vehicle miles traveled, not increase them. Unfortunately, the LPA that you're voting on today increases greenhouse gas emissions from today by 30%. With those numbers, we feel it would be difficult to meet our own Global Warming Action Plan goal of 75% cuts in greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Therefore, the SDC strongly supports some additional modeling or new data to determine what kind of bridge we're going to need. We support tolling with congestion pricing. And we also support that tolling earlier than the new bridge built, to toll the existing bridge to see how much demand can be pulled off prior to new construction. Most importantly, I think we believe that sustainability needs to be at the core of this bridge. This bridge is going to affect our lives, our kids' lives, our grandchildren's lives for the next 100 years. So we need to take a good long look at what kind of bridge is built. Thank you.
I just want to thank Leslie, and I want to thank the Sustainable Development Commission for all the time and effort that you've put into this. And if nothing else, I think what's historic about our consideration of this project today is the fact that we have a Sustainable Development Commission who is providing insightful testimony today. So thank
you, Commissioner. And all the commission. Thank you.
Director Garrett, could you come back up and respond to Councillor Liberty's statement regarding the authority over the decision-making at the state level? Did you hear what he said?
This is with regard to LUFA, I believe.
Commissioner Liberty, is that correct? Council Liberty?
Yeah, land use.
Yes.
The I know it exists. It goes back, again, to the 90s when South-North, the connecting light rail across the river, what was the issue. There's a vehicle there. It's not a vehicle to hide behind. It'll be open and transparent. If we can use it and bring some type of opportunity to streamline decisions, I'm all for it. That said, everyone needs to understand what the decisions are. As I said before, we are here to seek concurrence in the direction we move. I think that's just good partnership. So I'm sure that whatever decisions were being discussed back in the 90s, and whatever tool they thought would be used with this statute, if it has application here, it's a positive application, but it's an open and it's a comprehensive and transparent type effort. That's the best I can do. I don't have a whole lot of information on the application. But again, in no way will it defer us from making sure any conversations around the direction, whatever vehicle we use to assure remedies and solutions. They'll be transparent, open. And we'll seek the, as partners, we'll seek the appropriate consensus. That doesn't change.
How many people are signed up?
79.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We have 79 folks signed up to testify. I'm going to limit testimony to 2 minutes.
It's on the record.
Pardon?
I'm talking to you, sir.
So please call the first three people.
The first three are Edward Barnes, Craig Smith, and Jim Howell. They'll be followed by Lynn Lehrbach, Paya Welch, and Jeff Swanson.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and member of the councils. My name is Edward L. Barnes. I live at 4009 Northeast 50th Avenue, Vancouver, USA. And I heard Councilman Sam Adams speak to his last 3.5 years involvement with the Columbia River Crossing. I was appointed in 1995 as Transportation Commissioner for the state. And for the past 12 years, I've been heavily involved with the Columbia River Crossing, both as a Transportation Commissioner and attending probably 90% to 95% of every meeting on both sides of the river, both Norrie and Washington. I've talked to all five of you individuals sitting up there at one time or the other about Columbia River Crossing and how important it is to the people on both sides of the river from the freight mobility standpoint and for the workers that have to get backwards and forwards across that river every day. And if you look and see that people have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning in order to be able to get to Beaverton or get to Wilsonville or someplace like that and have kids that they need to get into daycare or try to get back across the river at night to get to see their kids play Little League or Scouts or YMCA or some kind of activity on the Washington side of the river, and that when you're out here sitting in the traffic anywhere from a half hour to an hour and a half, and when you talk about waste and gas, every time there's a wreck on that bridge, when the bridge goes up or down, or the traffic gets heavy, there's accidents, and the bridge in both directions continues to get bottled up. The lift spans are an absolute hazard. The bridge seismically is not in very good shape. The safety aspects of that bridge, when you're trying to drive across, if you have an accident, there's no place to pull off. The patrol or fire trucks cannot get to the people on that bridge if they need to have some kind of assistance. And so I am urging this council to do like the City Council of Vancouver did, CTRAN did, and some of the other groups have supported and vote for a new crossing plus the light rail. I'd urge you to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, Mayor Potter and Commissioners, my name is Craig Smith. I live in Battleground, Washington. I'm with the Cement Masons, Local 555. Just in Battleground,